Insight on Business the NewsHour is made possible through the support of Focus and Find, helping you turn human resources into a profit zone rather than an expense. Focusandfind.com.
Welcome back to Insight on Business. Grateful that you're listening to us from wherever on the planet you happen to be. With me is Claudia Bellany. Who is she? Well, she is with the International Economic Development Council, the senior manager of programming there. And we're going to dig into what in the heck the IEDC is, talk a little bit about their annual conference coming up in September, and a host of issues. Claudia, welcome to the Business News Hour. Grateful you're taking time to be with us all the way from Washington, D.C. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. It's a pleasure to be here. Happy Friday.
right? and we're recording this, ladies and gentlemen, just ahead of the Labor Day holiday, and which is an important, I think, event that we not only celebrate with barbecue and family and friends, but also remember the genesis of how we got to a Labor Day, which is so very important for so many workers here in the United States. Claudia, tell us, basically, what's the mission of the International Economic Development Council?
Yes, so thank you, Michael. We are a nonprofit, nonpartisan membership organization. We serve 4,300 members globally. We are the largest organization of its kind, specifically serving the profession and professionals of economic development. Our members are responsible for cities, counties, states, public-private partnerships, chambers of commerce, and we are responsible for promoting the economic well-being and quality of life for their communities.
Wow, that's a mouthful of stuff.
It is. I know, it's a mouthful, but we are responsible for so much, Michael, especially anything related to expanding jobs, facilitating growth, wealth, and especially stabilizing the tax base.
Talk to me about stabilizing the tax base. I suspect what that means is that the more economic development that a community, a county, a region has, that the tax base continues to be healthy, but not insurmountable. Would that be somewhat accurate?
That is exactly accurate. And how we're able to stabilize the tax base is through business attraction and retention.
Yeah.
So anything that relates to growing a commercial sector is going to help stabilize the tax base so that communities can pay for services and for the school systems, the police officers, the ambulances, anything that a community provides is going to help stabilize the tax base.
And for full disclosure, I am a city councilor for a community in central Iowa, as a matter of fact, and I sit on the Economic Development Committee, which is a passion of mine because just exactly what you said, Claudia, it is so vitally important for communities to continue to grow. And as communities or counties or states have a whole host of ways in which we can encourage development within our various communities. But sometimes we who are in that world need a little help and training. And I suspect the International Economic Development Council does some of that, yes?
Yes. We train our members in a host of different areas. So again, how to conduct real estate development business, adaptive reuse, workforce, talent attraction and retention, a host of areas we offer training courses in. We also offer certifications in a various of areas. Our highest designation is to become a certified economic development practitioner. And so that is the gold star of our industry profession. And so with those trainings, our members are then able to, again, stabilize and help provide a stable tax base for their members, or I'm sorry, for their communities.
With knowledge comes power. And that is so vitally important for individuals. Our community just hired a new city administrator who comes from, interestingly enough, the economic development side of his former job, which I think is really a great thing moving forward. My guest is Claudia Bellany, ladies and gentlemen. She is with the IEDC, the International Economic Development Council. What was the genesis of IEDC, Claudia? Where did it start and why?
Oh, yes. Such a great question. So in 2001, the American Economic Development Council and the Council for Urban Economic Development Council merged to form the world's preeminent organization. We love to call it the preeminent organization of economic developers. It's been 44 years since QED was established. Wow. And 25 years since our previous president and CEO, Jeff Finkel, created that merger. Wow. So that really is the history in a nutshell.
And when we're talking about IEDC, clearly by the very name of your organization, you're serving international economic development folks as well, yes?
Correct.
So, And how does all that differ? There must be, and I'm only imagining at this point, that there are different rules and regulations and things to know on an international basis. I mean, the economic development in France may be different than the economic development efforts in Great Britain, which may be different than Canada, which may be different than the United States or Mexico. How do you stay on track all that?
That's a really good, great question. At the end of the day, economic developers similarly globally are facing the same issues. Mm. Right now, we're in a huge globally having supply chain issues, yes, which every country is experiencing. So right now, a big conversation we're having is around foreign direct investment and how are we grappling these supply chain issues with manufacturing, all of that. And so another big issue that we're all facing globally are talent shortages, more specifically in America. But we also, it's an opportunity. Our organization creates an opportunity for partnership, for collaboration amongst our members globally. And so it's a knowledge sharing, thought leadership organization. So we're all pouring into it equally. And so our global members and our international members are coming to our conferences, our webinars, our courses, so that they can learn more about how can we improve our service offerings abroad? How do we partner more with America? How do we provide better service? And then we're looking to our global partners for what are some of their best practices. Yes. For example, we have an international webinar series right now that just concluded, and we talked about how can we improve and enhance sister cities, which is how you and I got in contact. And so that's an opportunity for us to share knowledge. We're also, we had a webinar on the global SDGs. The United Nations has charged all countries, all cities to get on board with the Sustainable Development Goals. Those are also opportunities for knowledge sharing and for a partnership with our global teams abroad.
One of the things that just recently happened, and you may know something about this, is that, and we had it on our news hour just this past week, that the United States and China, there was a warning offered to China, the second largest economy in the world, that uncertain issues there in that nation are prompting U.S. businesses to maybe have a second thought about investing in China. And those, there's fines and there's raids on companies and some political issues. So that would be one of those international things that folks, A, should know about. But B, you know, how do you navigate something like that? I mean, that is a geopolitical issue, yes?
Yes, it is. I love this conversation. We could talk about it all day. But for example, what part of my job is to be the convener of thought leaders to have these type of conversations. So at our annual conference, we're going to address this specific issue, what are the global policies that are impacting supply chain, manufacturing, geopolitics and protectionism across the globe. Sure. And so at our annual conference, we are going to have these conversations. We also have an opportunity with our ambassadors. We have a panel discussion between Ambassador Ron Kirk out of Dallas, Ambassador Kay Bailey Hutchinson, and they're also going to be addressing these issues, how our relationship with China will be impacting global trade, relationships with America, protectionism and such. So our conferences also provide opportunities to have these thought leadership conversations.
And that conference, ladies and gentlemen, is happening in Dallas, Texas, September 17 through the 20th. I want to talk a little bit about another issue that you raised, and that is talent shortages. We just had a story yesterday, Claudia, that talked to the issue of, and this is something we hear globally, but lots here in the United States, where individuals are saying, you know, people just do not want to work anymore. And we took a deep dive into the economics of that statement, and it seems that people, you know, rather than living on government subsidies, would rather have a job and would rather be productive for their families, but can't be at levels of anywhere from $12 to $15 an hour. I mean, for example, here in the state of Iowa, where our broadcast comes from, the livable wage for one adult and a child is $32.50 an hour. And so the bottom line comes that, you know, if there's talent shortages, is it because people don't want to work or that businesses don't want to pay?
Let me go back to your initial point. Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Why was that such an aha moment that people actually want to provide for and work for their families? Like, that's always been the case.
Sure.
People that are, I think that's a misconception, is that because a family is in poverty or in low income areas or in a disadvantaged situation, that it's because they're lazy or don't want to work, when that is a small percentage of the population. And so some groups have been labeled in such a way, and it's really, really disheartening to hear that, and to hear that these aha moments are happening across the country. To your question about, is it the chicken or the egg as it relates to, do people want to work, or is it that employers don't want to pay? It certainly isn't that people don't want to work.
That's correct.
The pandemic has clearly shown a huge amount of disparities within the system, especially as it relates to Black, Brown, Indigenous people. So it's not that those groups of people don't want to work. What's happened is there's a lack of infrastructure, which happens is there's a lack of resources that allows those people to actually get to work. So if you're in a low impoverished area, chances are you don't have access to broadband. So you're not even able to work from home and work in a remote area. You're going to have to travel. In these instances, there's not opportunities to catch a bus, which is something that we've researched and learned. In these rural, remote areas, they don't have infrastructure. They don't have bus routing systems. And so the pandemic has only exacerbated a system that has not been built on equity and inclusion. So is it that people don't want to work? No, that's not the issue. It's a systemic issue that needs to be fixed. And so there's a talent shortage. And why is there a talent shortage? Because there's a skills gap. So there's a lack of training that's happening right now, and there's a lack of resources. So if you're already in an impoverished situation, how are you going to pay for the skills and the upskilling and the retooling that is needed to get the jobs of the future?
You and I are thinking along the same lines, Claudia. We spend quite a bit of time talking about this disparity. And it is not only, and this is another misconception, I think, that so many people think, that these are issues of urban development problems. But we're finding this. We come to you from a very rural state. You know, agriculture is a big thing here. But we're seeing exactly what you said in these small rural communities that are being hollowed out. They simply don't have opportunities in many places. There is no broadband. There is no opportunity to work from home. There may be, you know, and they may be the only jobs that are available are low-skilled jobs where, you know, the pay is relatively meager. And so breaking out of that cycle is really tough. And you are so correct. People want to be productive and work and supply good things for their families. My guest is Claudia Bellany, ladies and gentlemen. I didn't mean to go down that road, but when we talk about talent shortages, there is a host of issues that come up with that. I'm so glad that you were able to speak to that. Tell me who can become a member of IEDC.
Oh, we would welcome any of your listeners to become a member of our organization. We are always open enrollment. It's a very simple process. We offer an immense amount of discounts on our products and services. You're able to take training courses, webinars. Can we provide a link for folks in the follow-up, Michael?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. We do a membership spotlight. We have access to our economic development research partners, which is the premier thought leadership group in the country. And just so many opportunities. We have different publications, Economic Development Journal, Economic Development Now, all of which I'm so passionate about. We have a vast network of professionals across the world. And so we welcome anyone listening to reach out to us about membership. We have an amazing membership team. We have a very high retention rate. And then becoming a member opens up your world to so many different opportunities, even outside of IEDC. We have so many partners that we work with. And so I encourage anyone looking to expand their network and to expand their breadth of knowledge of not just economic development, but just land use, redevelopment, utility structure to join.
Yeah, and these opportunities are so vital looking forward. You know, one of the things, and I'll never forget, I was in a seminar years ago, and the speaker said, okay, I'm just going to have a conversation about golf. Oh, well, this is interesting. And so the person said, how many of you folks in the audience, there's about 250 people there, how many of you play golf? And a large percentage of the individuals raised their hand. And they said, yeah, I play golf. And okay, how many of you watch the Golf Channel? And so that you're kind of into that sport. And a bunch of hands went up. And then the presenter said, how many of you subscribe to a golf magazine? How many of you have taken golf lessons? And oh, yeah, a whole bunch of people. And then the presenter said this, I'm going to ask you how many of you do further education in whatever your career is. How many books do you read about your career choice? How many seminars do you attend about your career choice? How do you learn to do better in your job, whatever that job might be? And not many hands went up. So, to your point, these types of membership value propositions are so vital to not only the individual, but where that individual is serving. Would you agree?
I would absolutely agree. Our members range, let's just talk about just in demographics.
Sure.
So we know that over 10,000 baby boomers are retiring every day. And so there's been such a shift even in our membership base. When I've been looking at our trends over the years, it used to be comprised of probably 75% of an age group of, let's just say, 50 to 74. Yeah. But these folks are retiring out of the membership base. And so now we have a younger crop of leaders that are eager. They want change. They want globalism. They want, you know, ESGs. They want to have a more sustainable global economy. And so we've even had to shift even in our product offerings, because everything is not just about, quote, capitalism, but how do we become global partners? So it's caused all of us thought leaders and programmers to look at even how we're doing our jobs differently. And so our membership now has kind of trended a lower, not a lower, but a younger age group but we still run the gamut of senior leadership. We have CEOs all the way to business retention managers, coordinators. We have executive directors. We have governors who are members. We have mayors who are members. I mean, we really run the gamut of not only profession, age demographic, and occupation level.
I am so grateful that Deb Brown, a mutual friend of both of ours, connected us, because this has been an enlightening experience. Full disclosure, up until just a week ago, I had no idea that the International Economic Development Council existed. And you folks are doing some wonderful work, and I certainly do support this, and I'll have a conversation, I suspect, with our new city manager and see where we can go with that.
Yes, and anyone who's looking to attend our conference in Dallas, yes, we would be happy to welcome you. It again, it's September, when do we start? September
17th.
Is the kickoff, 17th through the 20th. We would love to see you in Dallas. Please introduce yourself to me. We welcome you. We can get you registered. It'll be an experience you will not forget. We have an amazing CEO, Nathan Oley, who will be unveiling our new strategic plan. And so we welcome you all to participate and be a part of the implementation strategy across the country.
Claudia, thank you so very much for spending so much time with us. I certainly appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me, Michael. And thank you for your viewers and listeners for this wonderful conversation.
Once again, that is the voice of Claudia Bellamy from the International Economic Development Council. And yes, we will have links to their website on the radio blog. That's a wrap for this edition of the Business News Headlines. Thanks so very much for joining us. For all of us that put this together each and every day, Chap Ramsey is our production coordinator, sales and marketing, Aaron Libby. The voice of the Business News Hour is Hunter Pease, and the music you're listening to right now is arranged, composed, and conducted by our friend James Goodlett of Jam Good Productions. For all those folks and for Claudia Bellamy, my name's Michael Libby. Have yourself a great day. Be safe, be well, be careful. Most of all, be good to your fellow man. Good day.